This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
I got together in a living room and started talking about the fact that they didn't want to have to move out of their homes as they got older. They didn't want to move to assisted living. They didn't want to have to give up the things that they loved. And they also didn't want to destroy their relationship with their adult children by making them their caregivers. So how could they do that? How could they create a neighborhood organization that would allow them to do that, that would bring the services to them in their homes instead of having to move them to some other place where they would get the services, which is the model we've been working on.
And they did figure out how to do that. What did they figure out?
Well, they figured out that if they made a nonprofit membership organization that was designed to help coordinate services, and they got a lot of volunteers from throughout the neighborhoods and also some service providers who had been carefully vetted and would be willing to give a discount to village members, they could create an affordable way for people to age in their own homes. And now, over a decade later, Beacon Hill Village in Boston is going strong and has almost 500 members.
That's great.
And there are over 90 of these villages now open nationwide, with another 120 in development.
And so it's really happening.
It's really happening across the country.
Wow. And so meanwhile, you're trying to get this going here in Portland. What got you and Richie involved in this?
So a few years back, we moved to Portland. We moved back to Portland after being close to a decade in the Bay Area. And one of the things that really was surprising to us was that there were no villages here.
Huh.
We were familiar with them because we knew of the Beacon Hill model, and there are quite a few of them in California.
Even in San Francisco.
Yes.
Wow.
San Francisco, Berkeley, Palo Alto, Marin County.
Huh.
Just, there's probably 23 or 24 villages in California.
And nothing here yet in Portland.
And it seems so odd, seeing as Portland is so neighborhood-centric.
Yeah.
It seemed like the logical place for it.
Yeah. And so you wanted that basically to happen for yourselves.
Well, I mean, yes. We looked down the road and said, you know, someday when we need it, we want to have a village to age in. So what can we do? Because we sort of are the kind of people who believe that you need to be the change you want to see in the world. If you wait for somebody else to do it, it might not happen. So we have the skills and the passion for it. So if we start moving forward, we'll find other like-minded people who want to make it happen here. And that's how we've proceeded.
Uh-huh. And you just got the ball rolling on this how long ago?
We put up the Village PDX website in October of 2011. And we sort of said, well, we'll just put it up and see if anybody finds us. I mean, we were finishing up some other projects. And so we'll put it out. People can come from wherever in Portland. And what happened is we started getting, you know, emails, and people started asking about what it was going on. And so in February of 2012, we started doing parlor meetings, and we did them in our living room. And we basically told people, you know, this is when it's going to be happening, come. And we would give people, you know, cake and wine, and we'd all sit around and talk about what villages are. And, you know, we said, if you are anywhere in Portland, you're welcome to come. Our goal will be to get a village going on the east side, because that's where we live, but our other goal is to help anybody anywhere get a village going. So, you know, we have that kind of open-ended position on it.
Everyone needs to go through the steps. And so not recreating the wheel was a big piece for us.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys just want to, like, sort of have this template going that's going to be happening everywhere.
Right.
I mean, all over the city. And by the way, if listeners want to call in and ask Richie and Hannah any questions, the phone number here is 503-231-8187. And so what kind of people are actually interested in doing this? What are you finding out?
Well, what's interesting is that the people on the East Side Village Planning Group, which is the first of the villages to start coming forward, they run in age from mid-30s to mid-70s.
Cool.
And what's other interesting is that none of the people who are on the planning group actually need services themselves right now.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like I'm doing this because I need this right this moment. They're all people who are pretty visionary. They want to make this happen. They understand that they will need it someday,
right,
or their mother will need it someday.
Right. Or my mother needs it now.
Right. And so their goal is, this is something that needs to happen. How do we make that happen? So they're fabulous people because they all care so very much about the well-being of our community.
Uh-huh. Real community-spirited people already.
Really, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And your website describes two kinds of village patterns. There's a top-down, and then there's the bottom-up. And that's basically what you're trying to create here in Portland, is a bottom-up.
Absolutely. Most of the villages across the country are what are called bottom-up or grassroots villages. They were started by people living in the neighborhood, because it's crucial that the people who are involved actually live where they're making the village. And they got together and began the process of making a village happen. There are a few villages nationwide that were started by either a social service agency or a continuing care retirement community where they wanted to expand their reach out into the community. But the kind of village we're working on is the standalone villages that come out of the community itself.
And then the people in the village are deciding what services they want and that kind of thing.
Yes, they decide what services they want. They elect the board of directors mm-hmm. for their own nonprofit, and that allows them to maintain control of it.
And what kind of services in a typical village do people get? How does this work?
Well, villages are interesting because there's really a variety of different things they provide. They run everything from a lot of educational programming, a lecture series, book groups, discussion forums, and social activities where people are getting together for potlucks or day trips or cultural things. And then they have a whole range of fitness programs, fast walking groups, slow walking groups, transportation to exercise things. And then you get into the what I would call the meat of the village, which is the services that allow people to remain in their own home when they can't do it. And that could run from having people come help you change your light bulbs, rake your leaves, turn your mattresses, take you to the doctors and have someone to go with you, transportation to the farmer's market, the full range of what we would think of as kind of like assisted living services that are delivered mostly by volunteers. They're delivered by volunteers, and not volunteers who are only within the village, but throughout the community, people who want to get involved and help with the process.
Right. And this really works. In these other villages, they're finding enough volunteers to make this work.
In fact, what we hear from the other villages is they have much more volunteers when they first start than they actually have need.
Wow.
They have to scale in how many volunteers they can bring in at a time because there are so many people who want to get involved.
Wow.
Of all ages. Everything from Boy Scouts to neighborhood groups to other members of the village, people who are older who can do whatever it is that works for them at their age, whether it's making friendly visiting phone calls to make sure that someone's having a daily check-in and they're fine, or helping out with a social thing or baking cookies. Or there's a whole range of ways people can get involved, including office work and all those things.
That's fantastic. I mean, because to me that was a part that was going to be a little difficult. How do you really find enough people? But the volunteer thing seems to work out.
And across the country, in fact, we haven't heard from a single village that has a problem. The other way that villages deliver services is they have tasks and things that shouldn't be done by volunteers, like electrical work or plumbing.
Right.
And what they do is they're like sort of the earliest version of an Angie's List. They find vetted vendors in the area who they can interview and carefully background check and who they can negotiate a discount for village members. So they have someone who or some ones they can recommend so that you don't have to worry about who's going to be going into your mom's house.
Right. That I was going to ask you, how can you trust?
Well, a big part of the village budget is spent in terms of carrying insurance and also doing background checks.
Uh-huh.
And it's all volunteers. Anybody who works with anybody in the village, any member, is carefully background checked so that we have this huge quality control on it.
Well, I want to get into the East Side Village again. What is actually the boundaries that you've set out for the East Side Village? How big is this?
Well, when you go to look at defining a village boundary, one of the things we've learned nationally is that you try to look for an area that has around 10,000 people over the age of 65.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
10,000. And Beacon Hill had that?
Beacon Hill had slightly less than that, but they've expanded. They're not just Beacon Hill. They're now Back Bay and most of central Boston.
Oh, wow.
So you look for about that number. You also look for where naturally occurring boundaries RR so that you can try to figure out where it's logical to divide up the village? And where do you have people from a planning group who live in those neighborhoods? Because it's got to be sourced from the bottom up.
Right.
So we found when we got the planning group together for Eastside Village that the logical boundaries for us were from the Willamette River on the west to I-84 on the north, and it kind of turns into Halsey when it crosses 205, and then out to about 130th on the east and Powell Boulevard on the south.
So that's a big area, actually.
It's a big area. It's all a part of 12 Portland neighborhoods. Now, the village, one of the villages up in Seattle, is even bigger. It's 14 Seattle neighborhoods. But we'd like to see, you know, that be a village, and we'd like to see the area south of Powell in the same configuration be a village, and we'd like to see a village in northeast, and one further east incorporating part of Gresham. I mean, we're going to take a lot of villages.
The west side, the Pearl District, all these
different. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of villages to serve Portland.
Yeah, yeah, many villages to take care of old people.
Well, you know, it says that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to age in place. We're not really going to do this by ourselves. It has to be an interdependent thing.
Yeah, yeah. This is incredible. So, and luckily, I happen to live in your village, so.
We're very excited about that.
And then, how many people then do you expect to join? Not all 10,000, of course.
No, actually, it's one of the funny stories about villages. You have this situation where, you know, you'll talk to people about villages, and some people are what we call NRYs. That stands for not ready yet. Uh-huh. They think it's a great idea, but they're not ready yet to join. They'll join later. And some of these people who are not ready yet are 92. You know, they just don't see themselves as having the needs.
Right.
What will be our goal is that over probably around a 3-year period, we would like to have 300 members. It's a very conservative.
That sounds doable.
Yeah, it's a very conservative estimate. You kind of look at it and say, maybe the first year you'll get up to 60 members, and how does it grow from there?
And how much would it? Well, actually, I just want to let people know again. I'm speaking with Richie and Hannah Andler. They're spearheading a movement to start Eastside Village, and actually a village movement here in Portland to help elder people age in place in their own homes. And you're listening to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And so basically, another question about this is, what is it going to cost people then to do this? Or like, how? And there must be some fees with this, right?
We don't have a fixed membership fee right now because we haven't ascertained what all the services are going to be. This May and June, we're going to be doing extensive surveying of our service area and try to find out what exactly services people want. But the average rate across the country is somewhere between $12 and $15 a week.
So it's doable. It's, for transportation, it includes, changing your beds.
It includes a lot of services and support. And so it's quite doable.
So over the year, that's maybe
somewhere between $600 and
$750. Oh, God. That is so much cheaper than a nursing home. I mean, that's like.
The going rate on a nursing home is at the most inexpensive is around $3,000 a month.
Exactly. Yeah.
And interesting, there's a lot of private organizations that sell the kind of services that villages do. They will transport you places, or they'll help with cleaning your house, or they'll do those things. And the going rate on those is somewhere between $19 and $25 an hour.
Yes, I know. I've checked out that kind of thing. It's really expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're you know, villages are designed to be affordable ways. In fact, we keep saying to everybody, we're trying to help people be able to age in place and stay there as long as they can for as little as they can.
And what if an elderly person is so impoverished that they just can't afford it? Is there like exceptions made? Or?
What we're going to be trying to do is that there are many different options that are figured out across the country for trying to deal with low-income members and sliding scale. By the time we can reach a point of 300 members, we should be able then to do reduced cost memberships. And those can be as little as like $100 a year.
So pretty much anybody could be a part of this.
Anyone can be a part. And certainly people are encouraged, anyone who is interested is encouraged to volunteer.
Again, I'd like to let listeners know, if you're interested in talking to Richie and Chana. Oh, we have a call? Okay. Anyway, no call yet. But if you want to ask a question, the phone number here is 503-231-8255. 8187. And but what about people finally get, I mean, where they, I to me, like, you know, just working as a physical therapist, they have really bad Alzheimer's, dementia, there's super fall risk, that kind of thing. Finally, people can't age in place eventually, right?
It's true. I mean, you don't know the trajectory
right.
of anybody's aging. There are people who live in villages and who are 92, and yes, they can't open jars and they can't drive any longer and they can't do things, but they're perfectly fine. Other people can have dementia as early as their, you know, 50s
right.
and 60s.
Yeah.
When you are in a place where you can't remain in place, hopefully the village people would be able to help you make the transition into a different kind of facility. But we hope that people will have saved so much money from being able to live in the village that they'll then be able to afford the next stage in their evolution. Because
yeah.
that's the problem. You know, everybody who knows anything about aging knows that it's the last year of your life that is, by most accounts, the most expensive.
I had a friend, and she ended up going into debt trying to take care of her mother in a nursing home. Yeah, it was hard. The mother had no money, and she was paying for it. Yeah, so to get people to really, like, stay in their home is also less expensive. Yeah. And is technology helping you guys get this going? This is Richie's question.
Well, having a presence online certainly is. You know, being able to communicate with folks, have them do the surveys online. You know, we leverage as much as we can.
You've got your own website, but you're getting a lot of interest through the web and being able to get the word out through the web.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's good.
And social media, you know, Hannah's the social media wizard like that. You know, if you want to know what's going on with seniors and possibilities for the future, you know, check out our Facebook page.
Yeah, there's a Village PDX chat group, and there's also a Village PDX Facebook page.
And your website, villagepdx.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is, yeah, there's a lot of information on that. I was blown away by all the different links and connections and what's going on. And what about baby boomers? Are they having a huge influence on this whole thing?
It's largely believed across the country that baby boomers are going to change the face of what it means to age in the country. And it's because most of us want to do it the way we saw our parents do it.
Right.
It doesn't work for us. I would say the largest majority of people in the East Side Village Planning Group are baby boomers. And I think that this is a group that's really profoundly concerned about how to make a better aging for themselves.
And you two are baby boomers yourself.
We are baby boomers ourselves. It's very typical. We're not, you know, I think that having an impact and trying to figure out what you can do to continue to improve the world, continue to make a difference is a big baby boomer value.
Yeah. Well, I the whole concept sounds really great to me. And as you said, it's going on all over the country. So there's something called the Village to Village Network. Village to Village Network.
Mm-hmm. And it's designed to connect all the different villages in the country together so that we can ask each other questions, we can share information, we can learn from other people's example. You know, so you get an idea from talking to the different villages, you know, how long is this going to take? What's a reasonable timeline? How many people do you need to talk to find, you know, members? How to approach this?
So this is basically where you've been getting a lot of your information about needing 10,000 people
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I love it that it's growing everywhere. I mean, even in the South and in the, you know, all across the country.
Absolutely.
The Midwest.
There is a village in Seattle called the Nest Village, which stands for Northeast Seattle Together. There's a new village that just opened in Ashland. So, and there's a village, a very small village, but a longstanding village in Bend, Oregon.
Wow.
But, you know, the Northwest has not been a strong area yet for village development. So we're hoping to really catalyze that and move it forward.
So it's really time Portland gets on board with this, isn't it?
Well, Portland's very age-friendly, and it's very progressive around that. And, you know, we're really fortunate to have such great allies in this movement because the Institute on Aging and Elders in Action and AARP Oregon is a huge supporter of the work we're doing.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to be co-partnering on an event we're going to do in June to try to get the survey out to people and bring in a great speaker.
And so, you're also working with another group, the Health Advocacy Solutions?
Solutions is a fabulous visionary local nonprofit. And they stepped forward to serve as the fiscal sponsor. Mm-hmm. Because until the village can get its own 501c3 nonprofit status, by having a fiscal sponsor, it means that it's people make donations to the village, they're tax deductible.
Oh, good.
And so they're processing those for us and helping us move it forward. And interestingly enough, part of the reason they're doing it is that they really believe strongly that villages are essential to seniors' health.
Uh-huh.
It's a transformative thing in terms of how well and long people will live if they have the ability to get this kind of support.
And a lot of this has to do, again, with community then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what kind of keeps us social alive.
Yeah, well, they know that the most devastating thing for people as they age is if they become isolated. And every time you cut off something that would connect them to community, whether it's the ability to drive and reach out, whether it's being alone because all of a sudden you find yourself widowed, that all is anti your health.
And so people are in these groups finding themselves way more socially active all again.
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, you know, someone's coming, you're going to things, people are picking you up and, you have outlets, you have activities, and you may even have work.
Right, sense of purpose again.
Absolutely.
Right. I loved it, the story that I was reading somewhere on your website about a woman in her 80s or something who had been living in a nursing home, and then she managed to, quote, escape and get back to living in a village again and just was just so alive.
And two of her primary volunteers are people in their late 60s, and they help her. And when you ask them why they do it, they say, well, because we're paying it forward.
Well, that was the other idea about this. It's a real pay it forward kind of idea, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
The idea is we help each other, and then, again, sometimes someone will help us.
So how far along is the Eastside Village then, would you say?
The Eastside Village is in its first year of development. Over the next 18 months, our goal is to launch the service delivery part to be able to provide direct services and train volunteers.
In about a year and a half.
In late 2014.
Uh-huh.
But before then, our hope is that we will launch the community part.
Uh-huh.
We'll have social activities. We'll have educational programming. We'll begin connecting into the fitness pieces of it. The idea is to bring people together so that together we can develop the village. Because
uh-huh.
it's not like our village.
Yeah.
One person or two people don't do this. This is done by a real group of people who come together.
So once you have a lot of a stronger community sense going, and each neighborhood, all the different 13 neighborhoods, are maybe going to be a little more doing it on their own, or
how and where people volunteer within the village, whether it's at their own block or whether it's across the village,
right.
Which incidentally is not as big as everyone thinks. I mean, it's only 12 miles across, the whole distance, but that'll depend on how the needs of the community are and how the needs of the volunteers are. People go to a lot of trouble to do the right volunteer matching in community. So you find somebody and you find what they want to do, and you hook them up for that.
And there'll be like a central office that's doing all this coordinating.
Yeah, but it's a real small deal. I mean, villages are low staffed. That's how they keep costs down. So there'll probably be a volunteer coordinator and some other volunteers who help with that process and a very, very, very part-time executive director.
Yeah.
And if we can find a church that would love to give us a low rental rate on a room, that's the kind of place the village office will be in. This is not a building.
What are some of the other things you need then right now?
We need people to, come to presentations, learn, get involved. We have a lot of need for people to help with outreach. We're going to be doing tabling at all the street fairs this summer, and we want people to help us with that process. We want people to be home hosts. You know, if you're interested in this, contact us, and you can invite some friends, and we'll come over and do a presentation in your house.
Uh-huh.
So cool. You can connect with your friends and neighbors, and they can begin knowing about the process.
So you're just really getting this, and you've done dozens of these presentations already.
I've done dozens of them. We did all of them in our house for at first, and now we're doing
them.
Now
we have a team, actually. We have people who have gotten together, and they're all trained up on it, so they're ready to go anywhere.
Oh, that's great. And so you're really getting like more and more of this is spreading. And you have some meetings coming up soon, right? Where are they happening?
They're happening, we have them coming up at Southeast Uplift, at the building, Southeast Uplift on Main, and also at the Belmont Library. And someone can go to the eastsidevillage.org website, and all the presentation dates are up on the web.
So eastsidevillage.org is one of the websites, and then Village PDX is your other.
It is.
Okay. So if people want to go to those websites and check that out. And what? So do you remember what day the Belmont Library is? Is that
the next one? I don't know the Belmont Library one. The next presentation is March 11th at 7 p.m. at the Southeast Uplift Building.
Okay. So these meetings are coming right down the pike then, aren't they?
There's a couple in March, there's a couple in April, there's a couple even in May that have already been scheduled, so you can kind of look at your calendar and look out from there. One of the things we should say, though, is we're really, really deeply appreciative to the City of Portland and Southeast Uplift because we were a recipient of one of their grants this year in their small grants program. Uh-huh. They gave us some money to help with all this outreach.
Yeah.
And so they're just fabulous, and they've been wonderful to work with. And they can really see the importance because, you know, 10 of our neighborhoods, 10 Eastside Village neighborhoods, are in the Southeast Uplift.
And there's like, as we just got a minute left, but could you talk just a moment about the huge need for this, you know?
Well, the reality is that there are probably close to 250,000 people over the age of 50 in the Portland metro area. And even if we all wanted to go to a facility, there are not facilities enough for us to go to. And many people could not afford to do so. It's so much more cost effective to age in your own home with the support of like a village and people who love and care about you than it is to go into any facility. The difference can be between the $12 to $15 a week it costs to have a village support to like $3,000 a month and up.
Wow, it's amazing. Well, I just want listeners to check in to the website here. It's villagepdx, right, .org, or eastsidevillage.org. Oh, eastsidevillage.org. And a lot of really good information. It's just a fascinating topic, and we're all going to get old unless we die first. So it's something to be checking out. And I just want to thank you both for being here on the show with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Great. And I've been speaking with Hannah and Richie Andler, who are working to develop Village PDX so as to create multiple aging-in-place villages throughout Portland and surrounding areas. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I just want to thank Sam for engineering and Kevin McLeod for the music, and thank all of you for listening.
small to say the least, but the little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast, ever just the